He is Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMarkin. This is Car Keys.
Good morning to everybody listening, and I hope some of you are. I'm going to start off this week's show with a safety thing because I nearly got blindsided in my vehicle during the last snowstorm situation as I was driving somewhere, and I stopped at a light, and all of a sudden a sheet of snow slid right down off the roof of my truck, and it completely filled the windshield side to side, top to bottom. And fortunately, I was stopped at a light, but the light turned green, but I couldn't see it until windshield wipers, they floated on top of this sheet of snow. And a word to the wise, which we have talked about on this show many times before, you really should clear the snow, sheets of snow off the tops of your cars when you're driving out in the morning, because while it may be cold, if it's right around the freezing line, the roofs of your car will heat up with the heat inside, and then snow will loosen up and it will either blow off and fly in the air to people behind you and possibly smash into their windshields, or it will do what it did to me, which was I came to a stop and it slid right down and blocked my vision.
Isn't there a law about that?
There is a law in New Jersey, I believe, New York, Connecticut, I believe, as well, and maybe Massachusetts, all have implemented laws which may or may not be known to you listeners and many people out there, that we are supposed to remove certainly thick layers of snow, if not all of the snow, from the roofs as well as the windshields and the back windows of your car when you go out to a car parked outside in a storm before you drive off. Not use the driving to blow the snow off the top of the car.
Well, it happened. You were lucky. It happened to me years ago, and it just ripped off both my wipers, and I looked even more stupid then. My excuse, of course, was I was driving a minivan, and there was no way I could clear the roof off. That's why I don't drive a minivan anymore.
Right. Yeah, one of two things had to go.
Yes, the minivan or him.
Right.
And but to that point, to Jay's point, it's very hard with these tall SUVs and minivans to get on the top, and therefore it's very likely that people aren't even doing it if there is a law. But this happened to be in my Hyundai sedan, which it happened to me. And the interesting thing, no, it wasn't. It was in the Jeep. But what I had noticed driving to the point where I stopped and had the snow come forward is that a lot of it had blown off going off the back because I saw it in my rearview mirror. But apparently enough of it hadn't gone off, but had loosened up. So it was probably a half inch thick. It was one piece. It slid down as one piece. It did not break up coming down the windshield, so the windshield wipers would take it off, and it just completely blocked out the thing. Now, if it could possibly happen going down a steep hill and come forward instead of blow off the back, I could have been in big trouble, and we had that one steep hill on 44 from between Salisbury School, for those who know the local roads.
That's when we need autonomous driving.
That is.
Oh, here we go.
But that's also...
Autonomous driving would have solved it if they could have seen the covered-up lines with their radar.
Yeah, I don't even know how that's supposed to work.
We don't know humor. About that.
No, humor, absolutely, but just... There have been some things that have, let's just say, come to light, not just around these massive, you know, wonderful ideas that lack a certain, let's just say, je ne sais quoi when it comes to common sense or actual functionality. I'm not talking about autonomous driving per se. I'm just talking generally on this planet. So therefore, some of these things just need to be...
So to close the safety bit, really... We should probably be more responsible than we are
about
if
following
we have
that law.
A car parked overnight outside and it's piling up on snow, and that instead of just clearing the windshield and maybe the backlight, hopefully, you should also do your headlights, and you should also do your taillights, because it's amazing how much snow can actually cover them up, and they may not be visible even though you think they are when the DRLs, the daytime running lights, go on when you turn the car on. You may or may not see them, and taillights can also be covered, And if you put the brake on and nobody sees you stopping and they're behind you, they might run right into you.
Yeah,
so there are all sorts of these little safety things with snow that this show will maybe be the last reminder for this year about that kind of thing, although we have snow scheduled in our forecast.
We can only hope, but this heavy, wet snow is...
troublesome.
Yes.
Jay?
I think it's the most driving in heavy wet snow is the most treacherous of road conditions, except for ice, of course, or ice that you cannot detect.
But it's on the band of because the heavy wet snow can become really.
Let me tell you another thing to go about this heavy wet snow situation, and puddles of water with snow in them. Traffic coming the opposite direction you're going can throw this also up in a blinding fashion on your windshield, and if your wipers are not already running, you too could suddenly find yourself driving blind down the road. And tractor trucks, tractor trailers, other vehicles can throw up this kind of stuff in such an amount that it can actually block your driving. And that has happened to me in the past, and it's quite frightening for an instant, especially if you had seen another car also coming at you down the road that disappeared as the slush covered your windshield and you couldn't get the wipers on fast. And with all the wiper controls, sometimes on the right side of the steering wheel and sometimes on the left, it's sometimes troublesome to remember which side my wiper controls are when I'm suddenly in an emergency type of basis, trying to reach and get them going to clean off the windshield.
Just on a non-snow topic, but just something that we encountered just a week ago, there was a car where you probably wouldn't need autonomous driving. It was a car just sort of weaving, and finally, just finally got by the driver who had his gooseneck. I mean, he was clearly looking, sending a text, texting with someone, which you could actually see. And, people, there are other people out there. You might want to just not do that.
I want to move on to a couple of road test things. Yes, I agree with you, Jill. You should not text and drive, and we'll say it over and over and over until we are no longer on the air.
Okay.
So we honk the horn then, right?
Should we do that? And they wake up. A woman was looking, actually rubbernecking at a property which was on my right side and her left side. Therefore, she was coming at me, and she never did look up to see me. And she was, if not drifting towards the center line coming towards me, she was already there. And I reached for my horn to do it, and I didn't get the horn to go off until I'd passed her. But
how about a paint gun?
Paintballs?
Paint gun.
That would not be a good idea. I have test-driven two cars since the last show, and one of them was the 2018 Subaru Impreza. I don't know whether they're calling that a wagon or not, but it's a wagon. And not the Crosstech version, just the regular wagon, and a 2018 Jeep Cherokee, which is an updated version of mine, which has technological upgrades. But all and this one happened to be a Limited, and I'll go to the Jeep first because I took it out on a 30-mile test drive, and what I noticed that in the beginning was that the steering was not very good on it. And suddenly the salesperson, Mr. Rudin, who's my sales guy at Northwest Hills, said, oh, it's got the self-centering steering or steering assist gadgetry in it. And I realized why the steering seemed to be vague. It was directing me to get back in the middle of the lane because it was reading the yellow lines in the middle of the two-lane road. And if I was drifting, so the car ended up by itself going back and forth across my driving lane in little incremental variances as it was reading the center line and the side lines. And it was just giving me I had my hands on the wheel, and there was a gentle push. But out on Route 8, which is a two-lane each-way road, the steering felt somewhat vague, and then I realized that that's what it was doing on that road as well. I was in the travel lane as opposed to the passing lane, and if I wasn't really changing lanes deliberately, there was a gentle tug on the wheel.
Can one turn that off?
Left or right?
Of course, you can turn it off. I mean, It's a great feature. It can be annoying.
Yeah, I wasn't told.
And if you're not used to it, it certainly is. It can be a little disturbing.
It's like having reins if you're a horse.
But you know, this comes to the point of what do you know you're buying now? And the question is, you know, many people go in to purchase a car or truck or SUV, whatever vehicle, and they want a Cherokee. And so they look at Cherokees, and if they are not really knowledgeable, they don't read all the little things, you don't know what model they're going to walk out the door or drive out the door with. And it may or may not have all this stuff on it because the packages are so vaguely described on the window stickers now.
Which most people don't read.
I happen to be in a Cherokee Limited, and it was $45,000, a Cherokee. This isn't the Grand Cherokee. This is the compact Cherokee. And it had everything on it, including a dual-pane moonroof and all that, which brought the price up. But it had all this technology in it, none of which I realized I had until it started driving me as I was taking a test drive in the vehicle. And then I met somebody else as an example. This tells you they don't know what they get, or they do know what they get when they after they bought it. They just bought a new Renegade Jeep, and Jeep has made the miscue, in my opinion, and we'll see what Jay says because he likes to discuss what my opinions are. Jeep stopped putting CD players in their Cherokees and their Renegades as of the 2017 or 16 model year. I happen to have a CD player in my Cherokee. You cannot get a CD player anymore. They have stopped installing them. The salesman's answer is, oh, we'll just convert all your CDs onto an MP3 card or reader or something like that, and you can listen to all your CDs, and I'll do it for you. And I happen to have at least 40 or 50 CDs.
In
the salesman
car?
First says they're not selling them anymore, and that's true. I understand Target has stopped selling CDs, and others will follow suit as CDs become less and less a commodity that people are buying because they have it on MP3s or they've got what are these other Pandora radio to listen to and the like. But let me tell you, this woman loved her Renegade, but she said, you know what? My last Compass had a CD player in it, and they don't put the CD player in it anymore. And she was upset also. And so this is not one of the smarter moves that these manufacturers are doing. The 2018 Subaru Impreza, by chance, had a CD player as part of the radio system in it. They have not taken it out of their car, and any smart manufacturer will not take the CD player out of their car, at least for, in my opinion, several more years, because CDs themselves are a product that people have, and we still like to plug them in.
Doesn't that speak to the fact that the marketeers and don't know who they're marketing to? Because the whole thing is, hey, let's get young kids to buy the cars who, if you pay too much attention, aren't driving anyway.
Here's the other thing, books on CD.
Yeah, books on tape. Books
and you get them at the library. And then if you get in a vehicle that doesn't have a CD player,
you get them on your phone, and you have CarPlay, and then you just have it on CarPlay, and it's all well and good.
Yeah, it's all well and good.
Right, but the whole thing is designed that you put everything on your phone that you're not really supposed to be mucking about with.
Well, if you have CarPlay, you can. It connects to
your... Okay, but many people don't want to have to go through that hassle.
Let me be the
devil's advocate.
It has
a life. CD players have a life to them still, in my opinion, despite the technology upgrade.
Yeah.
And I will leave it at that.
Your opinion, correct. Back to things like CarPlay, connecting your smartphone to the dashboard of the car, which is what you're in essence doing, I think is a great idea because at least all of those commands that you now find on your dash are the same as on your phone, for one thing, which most people actually do know a little bit more than their car. And you go from car to car, and you're still facing the same information or the same information layout on your dashboard on your center screen.
For all the cars that have CarPlay, that's true. And the new Subaru Impreza has that on the dash. The new Jeep Cherokee has that on their dash. Mine does not. The older vehicles don't. And if this is going to be a reason people replace their cars so they can get this,
actually, I know people who have replaced their cars because
of
that reason.
And I know people who are not going to replace their cars for that reason. So it's a tit for tat situation as to whether people want it or not. Jay is certainly pro technology. He's been adamant about that with me for many months now. And we will continue to debate this maybe on this show and maybe not. Okay. Let's go to Road Tests by Magazine.
But before you do that, what did you think about the Subaru?
I like the Subaru. It's got a CVT transmission, and we were talking about that on our way over, Jay and I, because it still has the rubber band effect that allegedly many people object to in CVT-equipped cars. The rubber band effect, if you're looking quizzically, Jay will describe it better than I can. It's you push on the accelerator and nothing happens while you count to three as the engine spools up and you hear it race, but the transmission has to catch up to it because that's the way a CVT currently operates. Although there may be a fix involved coming from one or more manufacturers.
Couple comments. The CVT, and I'll say it, I have one on my Subaru, and you drive that like a, quote unquote, like a generator. There are no gears. It's continuously variable transmission. So the gears change as you go. So there's no first, second, third gear. It's a sliding scale, if you will. And the way to drive a CVT is just to set the engine at a certain speed, like pilots
2,000 RPM.
2,000 RPM, that would be me, and let the car go. And eventually it'll reach 40, 50, 60 miles an hour.
How do you set it?
With your eyes, and a tachometer on the dashboard.
Okay. My point is, you're very gentle in the way you apply power, and that is the most efficient way of getting around, and you get great gas mileage. Having said that, I can hear a lot of people going by just pushing on the gas, letting go, pushing on the gas, letting go. A little like my mother can't hear me now,
car.
So I can say it. My mother drives like that. And people who've driven slush boxes, you know, 3 and 4 speed automatics for decades, drive like that. They push on the gas, they let go. They push on the gas and they let go, which is precisely why manufacturers have come out with CVTs and 9-10 speed transmissions so that the car will take over.
That's not why they've come out with those transmissions.
Absolutely.
But, that's what does happen regardless of the manufacturer's intentions.
Okay.
The other point I wanted to make with Subarus, and just to let Robin know, all Subarus drive pretty much the same, whether you drive an Impreza, a Crosstrek, a Forester.
Outback.
An Outback. They're all, and that's the plus side. They're mechanically pretty much all identical, although there is a difference in engine size between the Impreza, Crosstrek family and Foresters and
and is that
Outbacks.
Something that the average consumer will notice, or will they be going more for the what they can cart around with them?
They won't notice it because the Impreza and the Crosstrek are a bit smaller, so their performance is very similar. They sound the same. They feel the same. The Impreza is a little bit smaller than the other two, although the 2018 Impreza is a much wider car than the previous generation, right?
It is wider. It's actually a very comfortable car. It had a very practical dash outlay of knobs where knobs should be, i.e. the radio, tuning knob, a volume knob, plus the usual touchscreen capability of preset station setting and changing. And also the temperature control and the fan control for the heating system was clear and could be used with touching. You didn't have to take your eyes off the wheel to turn them. You could feel what's going to come out of the vents in terms of temperature and air volume, but you didn't have to get over a touch screen to do it. And my Jeep Cherokee has a very annoying temperature changing mechanism in its touchscreen situation or on a button. It has a dash screen display of blue for cold and red for top and a vertical gauge, and you got to push a button on the dash or on the touchscreen and watch this thing creep between blue and red, and you got to count to 10 or hold it in it. You know, what happened to the knob? this is just idiocy of engineering ideas that are totally counter to practical reality.
I agree.
It's hard to get.
No, I would just love to get these guys in a room together. Not you guys, but
well,
the,
what's been happening is that sometimes the engineers have been reverting some of the old mechanisms because they've heard so much feedback, but they couldn't figure that out in advance. And, you know, if you build a better mousetrap, will we buy it? Maybe and maybe not, because it may not be a better mousetrap in terms of technology running the dashboards of cars. Toyota has come out, I believe, today with a public pronouncement that the gasoline engine is here to stay in numbers through at least 2030 in their estimation. This is countering the idea that we're going all to EVs and hybrids, which we are going towards, but not Toyota says not as fast as some people would like to think we are.
So you're speaking strictly gasoline?
Strictly gasoline, along with the line that they're doing a major technological evolution upgrade of all their engines and transmissions, the gasoline engines and our regular transmissions, because they're going to be around for many years to come, and they're going to be the lion's share of what we are going to be buying for over a decade from now. That's their pronouncement.
Okay.
And I will leave it at that.
Well, in the meantime, Jaguar's come out with their first fully electric vehicle, and I think it is pretty cool.
It's going to be countered by the Audi e-tron as well. Those two are actually both pretty interesting vehicles, in my opinion, for those of tech people listening who are interested in all electric vehicles. Both have got ranges that are, on the European cycle, over 300 miles. Or kilometers or whatever, no, miles, I guess, equivalent. And in the U.S., what, 245 and up for the I-PACE, Jay,
yeah,
I think it is?
I-PACE is 240 miles in there. That should be a safe figure. The I-PACE is a Jaguar's third SUV. They came out with the F-PACE a couple of years ago, which I know Robin tested and liked.
Yes, I like the gasoline version.
And they came out with an E-PACE that just came out, I think, in 2017.
Which is the I-PACE the hybrid?
No, the E-PACE is just a smaller vehicle.
Yeah.
And then they came out with the I-PACE, which is a fully electric, two electric motors.
One for each end, I believe.
Yes, front drive and rear-wheel drive. Both identical motors, just under 200 horsepower each. Nice amenities. It looks good. It looks really good. It looks like a fastback. I'm not a big fan of SUV coupes in general, but Jaguar has done a great job with this I-PACE.
And I believe they're almost at a dealer near us. I've been getting some teaser emails from a couple of dealers about going to an opening to see the I-PACE.
Yeah, and I believe it's pretty much a mid-size SUV. It's obviously not going to be cheap.
What's it meant to go against? Or is it meant to be is a Tesla?
Obviously, as an electric, it's going to be pegged against the Tesla X, and it will be a little cheaper than the Tesla X. And from what I could see, it'll also be a little bit smaller. But in the general market of midsize luxury SUVs, I see that the I-PACE going against BMW X3s and X5s and Audi Q5s.
And to Jay's point about it being all electric, with this new legal ruling in Germany mandating the capability of cities to possibly ban diesel-propelled vehicles, which is spreading to Italy and France and maybe England and all that, the electric vehicle is here to stay because even though you've got to worry about recycling batteries that wear out, and they don't seem to wear out at least for 200,000 miles in many of the cars so far as I can tell, so I don't know what the wear out rate's going to be for some time to come. We are going to be seeing in urban areas probably a lot of electric vehicles being requested, if not required, to be operating in the cities. At least in Europe, ahead of the U.S., probably, the way it goes. where the Europe gets there first, we follow, except maybe in L.A. or some of the advanced Western cities in California.
He is Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMarkin. This is Car Keys.